You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Welcome back to Between Pages and Friends, a book club podcast hosted by Con and Lauren, two besties who read a lot of books. And John and Kyle are supportive gamer husbands who've agreed to read with us. I'm Lauren.
I'm Con.
I'm John.
And I'm Kyle.
Welcome to episode 5 of our Throne of Glass book club. In this episode, we are discussing Crown of Midnight, chapters 19 to 39. This is a book club style podcast, meaning there will be no spoilers for future chapters or books. So if you've only read Throne of Glass and up through chapter 39 of Crown of Midnight, this is a safe space to process while we discuss.
Yes. So if you don't know why Kale would have loved the Shazam app, go read through chapter 39 and come back. Additionally, this is your mild content warning, as we will be discussing themes from this book that include a broom closet and a killing calm. This episode will include a brief name pronunciation guide with Con, a chapter recap from myself, initial reactions and favorite moments, followed by Kyle and Lauren's thoughts and theories on this chapter section. Also, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening. Taking a moment to write a review or share with a friend is the best way to help the show reach more people, and it means so much to us.
And if you're looking for more bonus content, you want early access to episodes, an incredible community of other book lovers, live events, merch discounts, and more, you should check out our Patreon. We have two tiers that you can choose from that have awesome perks. The Snack Court tier is $5 a month, or the Peach Ring Book Club tier that is $10 a month. Head on over to Patreon and check out which tier fits you best.
We love seeing the messages you guys write to us on our website at checkout. A recent one from Vanessa, who ordered the Team Rassand crew neck and our logo joggers. She wrote, "Thank you for letting me relive Throne of Glass. I'm on Queen of Shadows. And when I posted a picture of the cover, I was able to reconnect with an old friend," which is amazing. Aww. Vanessa, thank you for sharing this with us and supporting our channel. That's exactly how we got started. And we love seeing other friendships forged between great books.
All right, we're going to get into the pronunciation guide for Crown of Midnight, chapters 19 to 39. These are based on the audiobook pronunciations by Elizabeth Evans. So kicking it off, we have this conversation with a witch. And so we get a few different terms and names associated with the witches. So the first one is Crochan witches. This is spelled C-R-O-C-H-A-N. We find out that they are in opposition with the Iron Teeth clan of witches. We know that there were Crochan queens, the last of which had cursed the Iron Teeth to a existence. And the witch who tells us this, her name is pronounced Baba Yellow Legs. I started putting little, like, typing out pronunciations in my outline here, and I put next to Baba Yellow Legs, I put Baba Yellow Legs, have you any wool?
Oh my gosh.
Thank you to our kids.
Yeah.
For that one.
Yeah. So we have Baba Yellowleg. She's the lastborn witch of the witch kingdom. Then we get the Asterian stallions or mares. And Selena was saying that she stole her Asterian mare from the Lord of Xandria. Then we get a mention of Adian Ashriver, the cousin of the heir of Terrasen. Megra, who is the glass castle's head cook. We learn about Volg, who were the demons who stole Fae to breed with them, creating the witches. Volg is spelled V-A-L-G. Taryn, who is Kael's younger brother. Res and Danon were two of Kael's guards that were mentioned a few times in this chapter section. Morath is Parrington's territory where he's taking Keltaine. Eowyn Jayne and Rourke Farron were mentioned. Eowyn Jayne was someone that Selena killed in the vaults like a long time ago. And then Kael's father, who apparently also doesn't have a name, he's just referred to as the Lord of Aniel. And then the last one that I have for this chapter section is Harlan Sensel, and he is the head librarian in the castle. So that's all I have for this one. This was not quite as long as one for the first section of Crown of Midnight. So It's John's turn. We're rolling right into the chapter recaps.
Rolling right into the chapter recaps. And boy, do we have some moments in this week's chapter recaps. Let's kick it off, okay? The king tells Kale that Nehemia needs to be watched. Apparently, there's an anonymous threat on her life. Interesting that the king knows this, but we've not heard anything about it, and Kale hasn't either. Kale decides not to tell Nehemia or Selena. We find out that Roland called off the vote about Calicula after Dorian left the meeting, infuriating both Parrington and the king. Very interesting. Dorian takes a walk among the carnival. We meet the witch, Baba Yellowlegs, as Connor mentioned, and Dorian, Kale, and Selena are all kind of creeped out by her. When they leave, Baba says to none of them in particular, quote, hide from fate all you like, but it shall soon find you, end quote. We'll talk about that. Her and Nehemia go to Elena's tomb. She tries to use the amulet in the eye hole, but that doesn't work. She later dreams of a white stag. She leaves the castle one day, and we find out that it's the 10th anniversary of her parents' death. We get the story of her trying to get out of Endovir, but not really a clear why. Dorian does some research on his family history to try and find out anything about magic. As he's reminiscing about his childhood, we find out that he actually met Aelin once when they were kids, as well as her cousin, Adian Ashriver. Selena organizes a special birthday dinner for Kale.
Aww.
Yeah, that's right, a romantic greenhouse rooftop dinner. Sounds damp, humid, and like a massive sweat fest, if you ask me. Oh. Anyway, she comes clean to Kale about the assassinations. We'll talk a little bit about this, but we see a huge character moment here with Kale and his comment about his duties being not what he expected them to be. Up to this point, he's had such a strong loyalty, almost like a blind loyalty, especially to the king when there's clearly more going on with what the king is doing. But this is really the first time that we see him possibly start to question it. And then they kiss, bah! And then they dance metaphorically with their bodies. You know what I'm talking about. They do the Humpty Hump, okay? And then they have what I believe, honestly, to be a super awkward morning after conversation that could have gone way better for Kale, but I digress. Dorian makes a visit to Baba Yellowlegs for some possible answers about magic. She's not super helpful and just creeps him out some more. Meanwhile, Archer warns some of his people and several who were on Selena's list of names flee the city. Nehemia basically asks for Selena's help in planning or just generally helping her efforts against the king. A big ask, I think. Selena refuses and Nehemia calls her a coward. Oof. And then we get to a point where Nehemia is talking with Elena. What? It sounds like Nehemia is about to do something a bit rash, something that quote unquote needs to be done. Kale gets chloroformed. Yes, that's right. Someone kidnaps Kale inside of the castle. What? Okay. And leaves a note that Selena would find. She finds the note. It's kind of like a ransom note. She goes to her quiet place of rage and goes to save him. Come to find out, it was Archer and his little band of misfits who are helping Nehemia, by the way. Archer confirms that. Also, to prove to Selena that Kale had information about the king interrogating Nehemia and he didn't tell Selena at that very moment. So she hightails it back to the castle to find Nehemia and her two Ilwe guards assassinated in her room. Like a devastating moment in this book and up to this point in the series. It's a gruesome scene. And when Kale arrives on the scene and she remembers what Archer told her, she turns on him, pretty much tries to kill him. She very nearly succeeds when some invisible force stops her dagger from going into Kale's chest. And it was Dorian. Bum, bum, bum. Right? As the aftermath of Nehemia's death looms in the castle, we get a scene from Calicula where the people find out about the death of their beloved princess, and they do not seem to take it well. We shall see if we hear more news of what takes place there. Selena deduces that Grave from the trials was the one to kill Nehemia. So she goes looking for him with death in her wake. And as she does, she pins his arms and legs to a back alley wall with daggers and gets some useful information out of him.
Damn.
So she brings Grave's head to the king, or rather to Mollison, who, through Grave, she learns hired him to kill Nehemia, and also provides the king with all the names of Archer's little group that she killed while she was going to save Kale. She uses this list to cover those who she saw flee the city and to buy herself a little bit extra time with Archer. She visits Archer shortly after, who tells her that they know the king has some kind of power that is outside of magic. Kale's father is a manipulative douche. Can I get a witness?
Here, here.
Thank you. Selena has a light bulb moment about the eyehole clue, and it's Damaris's hilt, Gavin's sword. So using the amulet and the sword reveals a poem about three powerful keys. Selena visits Nehemia's grave and sings some ancient song or chant in an unknown language. Of course, Kale follows her like a freaking sick love puppy, ends up asking a librarian about this ancient dirge, which is a lament for the dead. And the librarian tells him that Terrasen nobility, only those in the high court, would sing songs to their dead in the language of the Fae. Very interesting. And here we go again, folks. Now Roland's getting the headaches. What does it all mean? Selena continues to study the poem and comes to the conclusion that if an ancient being such as Mort is still around and kicking, then perhaps there are other ancient beings who may also still have a sliver of power remaining. And we are left to wonder who Selena may be pondering.
Very good.
That's
very
a lot. Good.
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, thank you, John. That's a lot.
You're welcome.
So that's a lot to write down and keep track of. So shout out to you. Yeah. You basically just wrote the book. So let's move into our favorite moments. These chapters were so crazy. So let's just start with chapter 19.
I kind of talked about this in the chapter recap, but I have a quote from chapter 19 about like Kale and his loyalty. Without his loyalty, he was no one. Without it, he'd given up his family, his title for nothing. And I just am like, it's so interesting, again, that he has such a strong sense of loyal to the king. Like it makes sense that he would have such a strong sense of that toward Dorian because they like grew up together. But it's just weird to me that he would feel this so strongly when the king is the king. And we obviously there's so much that we don't know about him. And as he says, if he doesn't have that, then who is he? He gave up his throne to do this. So it's, I don't know. It's just very odd to me.
For me, this felt more clear later when his actual dad showed up, didn't care about him for the last however many years, yeah. Didn't show any interest or whatever. And so maybe this king is like some sort of father figure that's promoted him and has treated him with respect in the role that he is. And he makes his own decisions and does his own things. And obviously he like grew up in this country. Like this is all he's known.
Yeah.
So there's some of that he only has one point of view until Selena shows up and shows him this other side of things. But
yeah, this felt like some necessary character development from Kale to like explain a lot of his actions and motivations in this book in particular. Like he worked through the ranks like really fast. And so it sounds like that's been his focus is like becoming captain of the guard. But now he's captain of the guard and he's like, I don't know if this is what I expected. And then
been there.
Haven't we all?
Not with Captain of the Guard, but with other stuff.
Yeah. I agree with how you said too later when he's meeting his dad. It's like his dad's not a great guy. Yeah. So was he thinking about what was the decision point for him saying, I'm going to leave my throne entirely into a totally different thing instead of just saying, well, I'm next in line. I'll fix our country when I take the throne that's rightfully mine. Or was he just afraid that he would become his dad?
I think we do get some of that reasoning more later, like as we learn more about Kale and his relationship with his dad. But yeah, I feel like this book is huge for him in terms of that development because of what he's going through with Selena and Nehemia. And we'll touch like more on that in a little bit. But I feel like this is the first kind of turning point for him where he's realizing, okay, now I'm here, but this maybe there are more things that I want to do that this doesn't give me the freedom that I thought it would, or it doesn't come with the responsibility that I thought it would, or I don't know.
Yeah.
Also, Baba's little warning.
Baba.
That's how they say it.
I know, but they never just call her Baba. They call her
Baba. Yeah, that's
Baba
true.
The whole time.
It's like you talk about your grandma. Yeah, my Baba. Cookies if you want to.
No, she is over. Old.
She's eating chicken.
She's eating chicken wings.
She's just sucking the marrow out of the bones over there.
Her little warning when the three of them all meet her for the first time, she says, hide from fate all you like, but it shall soon find you. And in the moment, it seems like this is directed toward Dorian. And I think it even says that she is kind of like looking at him. But I found it so interesting. It dawned on me like this could be to all three of them in their own way, because they're each fighting against like a larger force at work in their lives. And I don't know. It seemed so small, but it was just like, it's such a huge realization to me. Dang, that could be for all three of them, even though it seemed like it was directed toward Dorian.
Yeah. Well, and I appreciate you bringing that up because for me going into, oh, they're going to go see a fortune teller. I was like, oh yeah, we're going to get some sweet foreshadowing. I'm going to like hold on to this information for forever until it like happens. And then I don't know. So I'm glad that somebody got something out of that because I just left that being like, dang, that was really disappointing.
Yeah.
As a fairy tale enthusiast myself, I really enjoyed Yellowlegs overall. I assume she's an homage to Baba Yaga, or at least hags in general. It's like a very common myth. So I just enjoyed a fairy tale creature being in the story because they hinted at, you know, fae magic and everything. And we've seen some darker, like shadowy beings before, but we haven't had something that every character is seeing and interacting with, which I thought was interesting.
That's true.
Yeah. She is the haggiest of hags.
Hagalicious.
That's right.
H to the A. Ain't no other hags put it down like her.
Oh, that's great.
That's good. Same chapter. They go to the stables and Kale gets his fancy horse or whatever from Dorian for his birthday. She's telling the story about how she got this mare because she stole it from that lord, whoever his name was that Connor mentioned earlier. And I was like, I think she had a mare because she's the lost princess or whatever. I'm convinced that she's this Aelin, whoever this person is, that's the queen of Terrasen or whatever she is at this point. So that was my like, oh, she just had one in the stables when she was a child because she's so fancy. So,
okay, isn't this another thing that would have been explained in the prequel if they would have read the Assassin's Blade first?
Yes.
I'm building my case today.
Oh, that we should have read it first?
Well, I don't know. We'll talk about it, obviously, after you guys read it. But there have been several moments already where you guys have questions and I'm like, see, like, this would have been answered.
That's why I'm such a chronological person. Like, I'm all about reading chronologically.
Yeah, but there's a lot of people who are glad we're reading it this way. And this is the way Sarah J. Maas says to read it.
I know.
I'm okay with it. And I'm okay with the questions. Because even if it wasn't a prequel, I would still have the questions for later if it happened in a later book.
I was telling Connor either today or yesterday, I think if you view it in a sense of like, if you like to have a little bit more mystery and intrigue, then read it third or fourth or whatever. But if Kyle, like you said, if you like to read it chronologically where you know the events and when they happen, then obviously if you're like really about that kind of reading order, then obviously you want to read it first.
That is part of it. But I also think you get like a fuller picture of the characters at the start of the story. But there's so many pros and cons to both. We don't have to get into that here. Yeah. But anyway,
too late now. Can't change it.
I know. I know. But it's good. I do really like this reading order a lot. And I think there's some really cool advantages to reading it like third or fourth. But
yep, I agree.
Anyway, I'm struggling.
All right. Chapter 20. I just had a note in here that I was like literally so annoyed at Selena for just like leaving the tomb without even trying anything else. She was just like, oh, dude, this doesn't work. I'm out of here. Really? Like, are you serious? And I mean, Mort's no help. You know what I mean? But he just was like there to egg her on and get under her skin, which I think is pretty funny.
Something that I've noticed for someone who is told to be like a very well thought out person, like, oh wow, she thinks everything through. She's super impulsive. Like that, she just gives up immediately. Yeah. She eats like all the candy without checking it, like we said.
Like even later, whenever she's gonna go kill people or whatever, and she's just like, I'm doing it, it's happening, and she's good at it, but there's not really any thought process. It just
happens. And like Connor said, she's 18. Everybody's impulsive a bit at that age, but
especially when your friend just got murdered.
Another murder.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. 21. I can now believe, after seeing this scene, that Selena is a cold-hearted killer. Lauren and I talked about this on our own. But assassins, I don't know. Assassins only kill targets. Again, impulsive. She went on a big rage-fueled bender. So, she can kill people. Great. A good assassin? Right. I don't know. She still hasn't followed orders. She hasn't killed any of her targets.
Still up for debate.
Technically
good true. Killer? Yes. Murderer? Sure. Assassin? I don't know.
We had a long discussion about this one.
At this point, I'm only saying it to aggravate her and others.
It's working.
Classic Kyle.
Anyways, so in this chapter, I really struggled with like our reading chunk today because we read so many things and then all of a sudden it shifts your whole entire perspective on all of the things. So we're at the beginning here. And so we're talking about Nehemiah, where she said, no, Nehemiah said, she didn't tell me, but I know. So like at this point, she's keeping all these secrets. And I don't know, at the time, she's telling her like, oh no, I don't know anything, whatever. And then you find out later, my initial note was like, what else is Nehemiah hiding? Clearly she is. And then like later we find out like literally everything. I don't know. I struggled like writing these notes at the beginning because of that. And that leads me into my next note. I'm just going to react like I did at the beginning because I was so excited with all of Kale and Selena's romance. So I quoted, I can't tell if I should be ashamed of wanting to hold you on this day or grateful that despite what happened before now, it somehow brought me to you. And I was just melting and I was like crying and I was like, why did this have to get ruined? But anyways, I just feel like there's anytime you're reading a book, obviously things are going to change and whatever. But to sit here and talk about it and I want to tell you all my feelings about Kale and Selena. And instead, it's like all ruined because Sarah J. Maas broke my heart again. Only my heart, not theirs.
They'll get over it.
Anyways.
Oh, what you doing over there?
Spilled some hot tamales everywhere. It's getting kind of spicy.
Things are heating up.
Okay, chapter 22.
All right, chapter 22. We talked about this a little bit already, but I had highlighted the part where she asks him, what about being captain of the guard? And Kale says, perhaps my duties weren't what I expected them to be. And this was just another kind of tick moving forward, this character development for Kale.
Yeah, I had a big note on this. This is like a huge turning point because, like I said, it was like it's been all loyalty to him up until this point. And then now he's starting out that path of like, it's not what I expected it to be, even though he had been working so hard for this. So yeah, huge character moment here for Kale.
We talked earlier too about like, just why. I just don't want to know why the initial decision was made and why, yeah, when he came over, granted, he worked through the ranks quickly, but what gained him such the unwavering loyalty, like you said, to the king, specifically this king that he works for that he clearly doesn't agree with.
Right, yeah.
Well, now it's unwavering because of the ladies.
Well, just the one.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
No, not anymore.
Not anymore. Too soon.
Oh, depressing.
Gosh. And I know I had this highlighted too, and I put another note that I just said, I'm so sad rereading this note that I had highlighted after finishing the whole section because I highlighted, it somehow felt as if it had always been Kale, even from the very beginning, even before they'd ever met.
I know.
R.I.P. Sam, I guess, and screw him, all right?
Well, Kyle, I mean, we don't even know who he is.
It was a complaint that I had that he was like a big deal in her life until she went to end of year and she was in there for, was it less than a year?
Like
maybe
a year.
A little over, was a year. I think. Okay.
And a little bit of time here, probably just under a year as well. And already, oh, never mind. I thought Sam was it, but now it's all okay.
Yeah, okay, to be fair, she was enslaved and tortured and brutally, I don't know.
I guess that could make me forget who I love.
When people only last a month in there and then she survived for an entire year and then got pulled out to like go be an assassin for a king she hates, like all of those things probably change a lot about who you are as a person.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah, but if we're thinking of the story though too, she had zero, what's the word I'm looking for?
Men in end of year?
No.
A lady can only go without a sword for so long. Am I right?
Closure. Like, she had zero closure because she was true. Kidnapped like the night also that like he died. So it was like, I don't know. I feel like even with that span of time, like she'd be hanging on to that. And plus, I think it's safe to say that he was her first love because of how young they were.
And yeah, and she is so young.
And that's what I was going to say was like, who didn't think that their high school love was going to be their thing forever or something? I'm sure there are some relationships out there that worked for them, but most of us in the world.
Good for you.
Yeah, it wasn't the case.
Thank God for that.
That's funny. Okay, so I feel like I just get so fixated on one thing and I keep, there it is again, trying to figure it all out. And so this, for me, I have it multiple times in the notes, but every time Dorian is using his magic and something is frozen or cold or ice or something along those lines. So this is the time when he was in the library and all the books like came off the wall and it was the temperature in the library dropped, a frozen draft blowing in from a distant corridor. Or that's the description, but it's no, dude, that's I don't know, your magic or something. I don't really know. But I do find it interesting because every time they talk about Dorian's magic, it's something ice or frozen or cold. And every time Selena is doing something epically cool, it's like fire or it's burning or something like that over there. So I'm on fire and ice watch.
Nice. Coming from like a D&D background, my only theory with that is I know that the courts are probably different in Sarah's worlds than D&D, but there's like the spring and summer and winter and fall courts, and they all have relations to the elements. So maybe their magic, whatever it is, comes from a different type of magic area like that. I don't know. Shark Boy and Lava Girl also.
Nice.
Yeah, that's actually where she gets it from.
Dorian's basically Elsa at this point.
Yeah, he is. You're totally right.
Yeah. And the Duke Parrington.
The Duke of Weselton.
The Duke Weselton.
I mean, his castle probably looks like Elsa's. It's just made of glass and not ice.
True. Ooh, so who would be Hans in that case? Because would that be something we need to pay attention to?
Oh, that makes me nervous. Because a name came to my head, but I'm just going to hold that in. Oh? Anyway, all my next notes from this chapter are about Kale and Selena. And again, I'm just going to sit here and fangirl about it because we're in the beginning of these chapters. And so this one was, so Kale brushed her tears, lifted her chin, and kissed her. And I was reading this. Kyle and I were sitting there on the couch reading it together. And I like sat up and I like got, I had my legs like draped like across the couch. I sat up all the way. I'm holding my Kindle and he's just like looking at me weird. I'm like, shit, this is happening. It's happening. I was freaking out. I was very excited. And then the next description was, the kiss obliterated her. It was like coming home or being born or suddenly finding the entire half of herself that had been missing. Swooning and freaking out. It's just so precious. I had wrote too, like, if all of this happens and then he breaks her heart, I'm gonna be so upset. That's what I wrote.
Oops.
So I am. Yeah, I am upset, but that's okay. We'll talk about that later.
I know. And chapter 23, my first note was the highlight from where Selena is talking to Nehemia and she says, I think I'm happy for me too. And she was, for the first time in years, she was truly happy. And I put, sounds like it's time for us to have our hearts shattered. Janet, you're up.
What's that from? Is that from SpongeBob?
SpongeBob.
Sarah J. J is Janet.
Sarah Janet Mass. Oh.
Didn't know that.
I thought it was George Jetson's wife.
What? I don't think John knows. I think he's just faking it. He said,
That's right.
He's just being a good friend.
Absolutely. Thanks, 110%. Man.
Listen, gotta support the
don't
local girl.
Don't leave
girl
me
dad.
Alone in the trenches.
The local Goral dad.
Goral.
The Goral dad.
The Goral dad.
Goral.
Goral.
I was gonna say that's just like how Gru talks to his Gorals.
I was thinking about, come on, Goral. Despicable me.
All right. Also, in this chapter, I was cracking up about this, and me and Connor talked about this for a little bit. I thought their morning after conversation was just so cringe and so awkward. It ended up turning out they'd like started talking about like Dorian.
Bringing up the X right away.
Bringing up the X. I feel like I need to read some of it. Hold on. Let me find it.
Whoa. Oh. Bringing up the literature.
But I, John read this part before I did, and I was like, yeah, that does sound super awkward. But then I listened to it in the audiobook, and I was like, I don't know. Like, it didn't sound as weird to me.
I didn't think it was awkward. Yeah.
I don't know, man. Just the entire time. So this is what I did with Connor. I was like, I basically just read what they were saying to each other and nothing with the descriptions.
Sure.
Sure.
So Kale says, how are you feeling? And Selena says, tired but happy. Kale says, you're all right, though? She says, I'm pretty certain tired but happy is a normal reaction after one's first time. And he says, what? And she says, nothing. How much trouble we get in for this? And he says, I don't know. Maybe the king won't care. Maybe he'll dismiss me. Maybe worse. It's hard to tell. He's unpredictable like that. She says, then we'll keep it a secret. We spend enough time together that no one should notice the change. He says, I don't want you to think I'm agreeing to keep it a secret because I'm ashamed in any way. Selena says, who said anything about shame? Honestly, I'm surprised you're not strutting about boasting to everyone. I certainly would be if I'd tumbled me.
Tumbled.
What?
I did think that word was weird.
He says, does your love for yourself know no bounds? She says, absolutely none. We can't tell Dorian. He'll figure it out, I bet. But I don't think we should tell him outright. He says, I know. She says, no, not for a long while. But he'd be another complication if he knew. And he said, so how long have you wanted? And she said, I don't see how that's any of your business, Captain Westfall. And I won't tell you until you tell me. And then he tells her, the Yulmus Ball, maybe earlier, maybe even Samhain, when I brought you this ring. But Yulmus was the first time I realized I didn't like the idea of you with someone else. Your turn. And she says, I'm not telling you. And that's enough talking. I might be tired, but there are still plenty of things to do instead of going for a run.
It sounds so much worse when you read it like that.
But that's their conversation.
Yeah, that's their conversation.
Well, but there was more context to it, because when you first read the first part where she says after one's first time and he says what and she says nothing, I thought because you were reading it that way where it was just dialogue, I thought he was like, what? Like it was your first time, but he knew.
Honestly,
he did know
that. I thought that when reading it that he was like, wait, what?
I don't think he did.
No, he did know either. Because wasn't there a part in the first book where he says something in passing, like, I was pretty sure she was, I don't know exactly what he said, let me find it, hold on.
I remember, because he's talking to somebody else and he's like,
yeah,
well,
but he doesn't know that she didn't sleep with Dorian.
No, it's here. This is Kael's like inner monologue. He says he was fairly certain she was a virgin, but did Dorian know it? It probably made him more interested. That's from book one. Like, Kael, like, he says he was fairly certain.
But that was before her and Dorian's relationship. So he wouldn't know.
I feel like they would have talked about it. I don't know.
But
what does he say there? Because I thought it was because she gave him a look or something. And he was like, what? To the look she gave him, not him going, what? Like, it's surprise.
What? Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, that's true.
I thought it was kind of funny that she's like, I'm pretty sure tired but happy is normal for your first time. Because I feel like you only get a first time, and she has not been a part of anyone else's, including her own. How would she know what's normal for your first time? This was it.
Valid.
This is your first one. First and only. Unless she just, I don't know, she was friends with Archer, so maybe she just got a lot of reviews from the people that were with him.
Yeah.
Like, reviews?
Yeah. Tired but happy, 4 stars.
Would tumble again.
Would tumble again. Okay, the second half of this is, I was cracking up at this. Obviously, this isn't like how it was meant, but before they do, the little paragraph is, and then there was only them and skin against skin. And when they reached that moment when there was nothing more between them at all, Celaena kissed Kael deeply and gave him everything she had. I was just cracking up because it sounds like, I'm just going to give it my all. I'm going to go out there and
just this once, I'm going to have to go all out.
I was just cracking up. For some reason, I read it that way and interpreted it that way. And good. I just thought that was hilarious.
Oh, okay. I found it. This was the thing. She says, I'm pretty sure tired but happy is normal, blah, blah, blah. And then this is her inner monologue. And she was pretty certain that she'd have to talk to Philippa about a contraceptive tonic as soon as she dragged herself out of bed, because God's above, a baby, she snorted. And then Kael says, what? Because she snorted after.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of snorting, by the way. As a descriptor in this book, I don't know about the previous one, but I've noticed a lot of snorting, a lot of flicking noses.
Kyle's on snort watch.
Snort watch. Well, in ACOTAR and Crescent City, she moves on to he huffed a laugh and loosed a breath.
Oh.
Loosing a breath sounds very uncomfortable.
Anyway. All right.
Chapter 25. So Kyle and I have been talking about this chapter a lot. I brought up some speculations, and then John ruined it in the overview. And I went in while you were talking, and then I came and wrote that down. Because this whole chapter is really short, and it just mentions the queen and the princess. And they just talk about him and her. They do not mention anyone's name. You don't actually know. Now, my assumption was that it was Elena and that it was Nehemia. Unless it was Dorian's mom was the queen. That ran through my head for a little bit, but that just didn't make sense to me. But John had said before the queen doesn't really come back. So maybe I would have thought it was the queen and Nehemia, but I definitely thought it was Elena. And anyways, it doesn't really matter. I'm sure it's fine. We learn later in this chapters that Nehemia was down in the tombs all the time anyway, and whatever, whatever, whatever. But it does not mention necessarily who him and her are. My assumption is Dorian, because she kind of opened up something on his chest or whatever, and then his magic is happening. And then obviously Celaena's our main character. But I don't know. There was a lot of interesting side chapters in this one. Here's a page and a half of something interesting here. Here's a page and a half of Calicula. So this was an interesting little chunk for me. But we definitely debated who this king or who this queen and princess was for a while.
And I'm more debated because every chapter we get, you have a pretty obvious narrator. Even the side one in Calicula is the girl. It's told from Dorian or Kael's or Celaena's point of view. But you don't get it in this one. But it was in the tomb. And there was a queen and a princess talking to each other, and they were referred to as queen and princess. So I told her, the only other person near that room is Mort. So he has to be the narrator, and he's just referring to the princess.
I love that.
That was
his
point of view of the conversation.
That's really cool.
Well, it's all third person, so there's not always... Yeah. Usually we do get some POV of some sort.
It's still usually, yeah, one person's...
It's favoring some
inner... Yeah, exactly. Because even it could be the same conversation and it switches to another person's...
Yeah, this one was written... I felt like it was written more like a dream sequence, and maybe that's partially because of how the audiobook is narrated. Like, she uses this kind of, like, wistful tone for the whole thing, and it's so short. Because at first, even though I've read this before, I just forgot that this happened. And I started this part and I was like, wait, what? What's happening?
It took me a minute to figure it out too, that it wasn't part of the normal whatever was happening.
Yeah.
Anyways. Okay. So that was chapter 25. Chapter 26. This is when all the guys go hunting and stuff. And Kale and Dorian have a really nice conversation together about, I don't know, not really nice conversation, but they're just talking to each other, which they're definitely awkward tension between them because of Selena. Mm-hmm. But as Dorian's walking away, he like turns around and he's like, Kale, he said, looking over his shoulder, treat her nice or whatever it was. That was really sweet and nice. But what I found interesting here was that Kale's description of it was that Dorian's eyes were frozen. Frozen watch.
Elsa watch.
He was going Elsa on it. Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. Like, he really needs to like figure out magic.
Conceal, don't feel. Yeah.
That's it.
Don't let them know.
That's literally what's happening. That is very funny. And then later in the chapter, whenever Kale is thinking about Selena, I think it might even be in that moment, and he's just thinking about Selena, but he says his soul was bound to hers by some unreachable chain. So this sentence now, when I was writing it in these notes, makes me think maybe they'll get back together somehow, because there's been multiple times that it's talked about like some sort of chain that connects them and connects their souls together, and some sort of deeper thing than just 1 week of being together. So maybe this is hope. But I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. In 27, Kyle, I see your angry face under this one now.
That's my reaction note.
This is another thing that was just like these comparisons to Sam. This is when Selena is like, she's like sprinting through the city trying to get to Kale. And there's all these comparisons to Sam being pulled in, and like the parallels between the night that she was like racing to find Sam and trying to get to him before it was too late. I feel like these comparisons are so much more gutting and devastating on the reread. And this was when I texted you and I was like, my heart is racing right now. So anyway, I was like, this is another argument for reading the Assassin's Blade first. But it also just like, I don't know, I feel like it also changes your perspective, and it's cool on a reread to like see all of these things that you know more about the second time around. So,
and with that, I'll go with, it's going to be like that any book you read. It's fun to go back and you get something else. And then I'm just sticking with that. This is the Sarah J. Maas preferred way.
This is
I'm
the way.
I'm trusting the queen. I'm trusting. I have blind loyalty to the queen.
Oh, no.
Call me Kale. She's the king of Otterland.
I'll say now, because like earlier when we were talking about the reading order, that's my only thing about it, is that I like mystery in books, but I do not like usually later going and reading a prequel halfway through and being like, well, I know where this ends up the whole time. Even though I may not know the details of how it gets there, there is like a little part of me that's like, dude, you already know.
I know. I struggled with this because like when we read it fourth, which I felt like was worse, because there's definitely a more natural pause in the story after Crown of Midnight. John apparently doesn't agree with that. I didn't like reading it fourth, but I it was because I was so invested in the storyline by that point. I didn't want to pause and go back because I already knew how the Assassin's Blade ended. So I felt like I didn't care. I wasn't as invested in like the story or the characters. But then by the time you get to the end of it, it's great. And I'm so glad that we read it when we did. But I don't know. I struggled to like pause and go back and like actually care as much about what was happening.
Yeah.
I guess we'll find out.
I know. John, do you not agree? Did you like reading it fourth better?
We're on the second book.
Yeah.
I'm plugging my ears.
I think I do, because of the, I'll just say, the setting changes
in Air Fire.
Book 3 to 4.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, okay, I'll be done talking about it now. My next highlight was that I just was like hyped about this when I was reading it, but there's a part where when Selena like shows up and Kale is like basically threatening everybody else in the room, and he says, you so much as touch her and I'll gut you. And I was like, touch her and die. Let's go, Kale. But then he doesn't actually do anything because he doesn't have to.
No.
So.
No, I liked that he said more was just like when he was, I don't know, like smiling and smirking at them, like, okay, you don't know, get ready, that kind of thing. Cause that was, I appreciated him showing that she can do it. Like she's just gonna come in here. Mm. She's this boss lady. She doesn't need any help necessarily. Then, yes, he is obviously defensive of her. But the other part to me was like, yeah, you tell him, Kale. Yeah. You tell him.
That was so cute. They said, like, she's just one girl. And he's like, you obviously have no idea what's coming.
Yeah. Could you imagine if he was wrong, though? And he was like, you have no idea. And she shows up and gets murdered by people who are way older and more practiced than her. And they're like, yeah, of course. Because sometimes I think, like, an 18-year-old, 19-year-old telling you, you touch her and I'll kill you. Like, to me, I'd be like, okay, dude.
He's older than that.
He's like 22. Yeah,
he's like 22.
Right. Yeah. There's just that range of young adult, which granted, me right now facing a person who has been captain of the guard for years, probably not. I couldn't. But back then, an older person who had been a practiced warrior would probably not be intimidated by a much younger person.
I think this is what I had qualms with this one. He's like, you so much as touch her and I'll gut you at the one moment. And then the next moment he's like, you have no idea. You guys aren't even going to touch her. She's going to wipe the floor. It's just like, make up your mind, dude. You know what I mean? Which one is it?
Can it be both?
Can it?
I don't know.
Can it, Lauren? Can it?
Lauren.
Can it, Lauren?
Can it, Lauren? Can it, Lauren? Funny story. Words are funny. Me and Connor do something like that all the time where we say, no, thank you. And then we keep repeating it until it turns into no, thank you. No, thank you. Anyway.
No, thank you.
Okay. So Kyle and I keep telling Con that you guys need to watch this movie. It's called They Came Together. And they do exactly that kind of stuff, but different words and all the things. Yeah. And you guys would freaking love it. Please go watch it right now. Okay, bye.
Okay. Come back when you're- Thanks for tuning in to episode 5.
We're going to go watch a movie.
Okay. Anyway, during chapter 27, I was so stressed that the king had figured something out, like they were together, that she wasn't killing the people, and this whole secret, or not secret, anonymous threat on Nehemia's life that the king knew about, that all felt really sketchy. So I was honestly so relieved when I found out that people outside the castle stole Kale, because I was like, oh, okay, she can handle that. That's no big deal. That's fine.
These amateurs.
But I was so worried leading up to knowing that information that the king had figured something out. And I was like, it's happening. It's happening. But anyways.
Which also, it ended up being sort of a thing where, like, oh, she regretted killing the ones she did because they ended up being people. She ended up being like, oh, it was just a, yeah, because she was like, oh, I tried to remember their faces and I memorized their names, because she felt guilt for killing these people, even though it was Archer's fault, basically, for being an idiot and setting it up the way he did. But she went through a whole thing where she regretted those impulsive, again, decisions. Mm-hmm.
I think they were valid in the moment. Okay, first of all, murder is not valid. But like,
tell us why murder was right.
But like, in her thinking, in that moment, that was the right thing to do or whatever. But yeah, I don't know.
Which rolls into my highlight from the beginning of chapter 28. But this is more of a note specifically for Lauren.
Ooh.
It reminded me of the way that a chapter begins, all very similarly, but also very differently in Crescent City 2. It's not a spoiler, but the part I highlighted was her rage took her to a place where she only knew three things: that Kale had been taken from her, that she was a weapon forged to end lives, and that if Kale was hurt, no one was going to walk out of that warehouse. And I put LOL, slightly different from the three things Rune Dana knew with absolute certainty.
That was. I actually thought this too. I was like, oh, that sounds familiar.
Yeah. She's written a bajillion books by this point, but this is the only two times she starts a chapter this way. And I was just laughing at how very different they are.
But same, all at the same time.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. This is also just me publicly telling John he needs to read Crescent City 2.
John, if you haven't started reading Crescent City 2 by the time this podcast episode comes out, she's going to leave this part in. It's up to you to decide what makes the video.
Join our Patreon and then send messages in Discord to John telling him to read it.
Yes.
All right.
Anywho, 29.
29? The hype for this chapter. 29? Can't wait to see what happens.
Okay, I was really annoyed at Archer or the Resistance or whoever made the decision to kidnap Kale, because I feel like if someone would have just told Selena in the castle, hey, there's anonymous threat on Nehemia's life, even if she didn't trust these people, Selena would have done something. Like, she would have protected Nehemia. She would have made some sort of other decision, just because the possibility of if, even if she doesn't trust these randos. And instead, they decided to steal her boyfriend all the way across the entire city on the night that Nehemia was going to be questioned by the king or whatever, so that when something did happen, she had to run all the way back across the city again to be there instead of just being there. And that is a huge flaw on whoever is in charge of this resistance or whoever made that decision. Really, really bad planning. Yeah. The plan itself was stupid, but that on that night was extra stupid.
You wrote her a ransom note and put it in Kale's room.
Yeah.
Did you think to maybe write her a letter and put it in her room?
Yeah. Both of these books have had either no communication or miscommunication that has caused so much unnecessary drama.
Oh my gosh.
Or Kale could have just told her.
Right. Kale broke her heart before he even had it.
Oh.
Oh.
So she runs back all the way to the castle and she gets up to Nehemia's room and there's blood everywhere. And then the guards are dead. And I was like, okay, that's it. And then it's just its own little sentence. Nehemia was dead. I just dropped my Kindle. I had to like stare off into space for a second. And then I picked up my phone to write my note and I literally just wrote WTFFFF.
Womp womp.
Yeah.
Kyle.
Womp womp.
She walked into the room to talk about it and went, womp womp.
And then I walked out. This is not the sympathy I need right now.
I was like maybe a couple chapters ahead at the time. And I was already thinking like, oh, she'll be back like one way or another. I don't think that's the last way we're going to see her. We already have one ghost. Why not two? But she'll come back in a dream or something.
Well, and what you wrote here was we have one royal ghost.
One royal ghost, yeah. Ooh. As you know, if you are of royal blood and you die in a castle, you have free reign to come back to that castle.
Free reign.
I see what you did there.
That's funny. Okay, but then immediately goes into this whole fight with Kale coming in, and that was super epic and intense. Yeah. And like she scratched his face, which was crazy.
Claw watch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even the moment when she was like weirdly touching Dorian's face and stuff, and later he was like he was having nightmares about it because she was just covered in blood and all the whatever they could see in her eyes at the moment. But then Dorian stops her dagger from stabbing Kale, which is, first of all, crazy that she was about to stab Kale. And then second of all, that he could stop it with his magic. In my head, I've been trying to like attach a superpower to him. He's only going to have one power. He has super strength because he punched the wall and it cracked. So it's interesting in these last few chapters with the books coming off the wall and then now with him being able to reach out his power and stop something. It's magic. I don't know why in my head I'm trying to attach like one thing to him or something.
But all of that could be telekinesis. Floating books, stopping daggers, pushing a big strong force into a wall.
Stopping all the stuff from
And maybe him. His magic is just a I can't remember which one's which, but endothermic or exothermic reaction, where hers is hot and his is cold. It's scientific.
Nice.
Actually.
It's I think you'll find it's not magic at all. It's like the Scooby-Doo thing. There was a mirror here, and you reflected the light.
And then in chapter 31, Kale took her down to the dungeons, which also was a big oof on Kale's part. I just feel like that. Obviously, she just went crazy, but I don't know.
Can't just lock her in her room or something?
Yeah, that's just a huge another wedge in their relationship.
I feel like that was him trying to save face because she attacked him and tried to kill him in front of like all these other guards.
A couple of guards.
Yeah. That's like his duty as captain of the guard.
Right. But he, on the way up, was talking to Dorian and was trying to explain like how they got back to the castle. And he said, it was like ... I found a horse within seconds of her taking off and she still outran me. Who could do that? And I was like, he was about to say it was like magic because that's probably what it was. And there's been other times. See, this brought my brain to like other times where she did stuff super fast or how she's able to like move around and kill the people super fast. And then even later in the chapters when she was doing the stuff with Grave and she's like hunting him down basically in the shadows and how she can super speed of some sort. I don't know if that's a thing, but that was just really cool. And even in Selena's point of view of her running back and she's in the distance, I could hear the sound of hooves or horses riding after me, but they couldn't even stop me from getting to my friend or whatever it was. So
yeah,
that was all really neat to, I don't know, start figuring out. So there's that. But also in this chapter, we get, I do that a lot. I do the shoulders a lot.
A little shimmy.
You only get to see this part of my body, so.
And I just gotta shake it.
So you're saying if the camera showed more, you do more? What kind of a mantra is that? Sorry, you only get the shoulders. The camera can only handle so much. Sorry, that's for the top tier Patreon subscribers. You get waist up.
I'm crying.
Not gonna shimmy your way out of this one, Lauren.
Okay, what I was gonna talk about next is really sad, so everybody calm down.
Bring the mood
down.
Well,
you're already crying, so we're there. We're halfway there.
There you go. It was at the end of this chapter in 31 where we hear Selena think back to the last words Nahimi had said to her, which she ends up saying like a bunch of times, which was, "You're a coward. You are nothing more than a coward," which is like the most depressing, like, last words ever. And it just like keeps getting worse and worse. Later, Selena says something along the lines of that she has nothing to live for, nothing to continue on for, something along those lines. I just feel like because of this sentence, like some of, I think it might even be when she's on her way to Nahemia's grave or something like that. But I feel like it's going to end up turning where this is the mantra that pushes her to do something, to not be a coward, to be more than that, and to finally, I don't know if it's join the resistance because they're a bunch of crazy, not make good plans guys, or if it's going to be something else that she leads, or she really is this lost princess lady, but something that this is going to end up being like some sort of motivation for her. So with that, I am depressed beyond all get out that Nahemia is dead, but I don't know. I feel like I'm seeing how it's going to help her character growth as a person. I don't know. I'm trying to maybe be okay with her death in my heart.
It's hard. And that rolling right into chapter 32, the way that Sarah J. Maas writes about this grief of her losing her friend, and she's, and in Selena's head, she's thinking how absurd, how utterly absurd and useless that her heart still beat and Nahemia's didn't. And it just, she's so good at writing all the depressing stuff.
And isn't it like a day or a couple days after the anniversary of her parents' death that all this is happening? So she's already like in a very heightened emotional state.
Yeah. I don't think there's a time jump. I think we see the time happen, but she gets together with Kale on the night that her parents had died. And then they were together like a week-ish.
Yeah.
And then all this is happening.
It montages through all their little trysts and stuff like that.
In the broom closet.
In the broom closet of all places.
Yeah. You know. Anyways, in this chapter also, like in this moment, she's talking about her, I don't know, feelings about Nahemia and all the things. She calls Nahemia a soul friend. And I don't know why more people don't use that to describe their friendship. That is the most precious thing I have ever heard. Just to find someone that is just your friend that is like you just match with, mesh with, you get along at all things, you understand each other, and it's just so precious. And all the book girlies should be calling each other that.
Yeah.
So find your soul friend. It's so cute.
Maybe she calls her that because she's dead. She's a soul. She's
a soul. Okay. Kyle.
Dude.
Oh my God. That was incredible.
I literally sensed the deflation that just happened was
you could just
audible and everything else.
Tangible.
Oh, this is why I said book girlies go find your soul friend.
Yeah.
And your sassy husbands.
I will admit, if I called any of like my friends a soul friend, I think I would get the weirdest look I've ever gotten from a fellow man. He'd be like, "What are you talking about?"
Sounds like you haven't found your soul friend yet. So
yeah,
true. I don't have any real friends. So
I have friends.
Or it could be soul friend. You know what I mean?
No.
You have your jazz friends, your soul friends, your rock friends.
Yeah, that's right. Just
different genres of friends.
R&B friends.
Yeah. Disco friends.
Anyway.
Chapter 33.
Yeah. So chapter 33 was another one of those where it just jumps to a different part of the world or a different story, just like the one with Nahemia and Elena or whoever the queen and princess were down in the tomb. And this is about a girl who is enslaved in Calicola. That's how we pronounce it. Yes, Calicola. And It was heartbreaking. Yeah. Like, this is how I felt reading Raina Goldsmith's chapter, yeah, or like little side thing. And I don't know if it's part, I guess it's part of their culture, because even when Selena killed all those people and she was trying to learn their names and said their names. And so Raina Goldsmith did that as she was dying. She listed off all these people's names. And so then this girl who is enslaved in Calicola also does the same thing right before she stabs the guard with her pickaxe and and assumedly dies afterwards. Doesn't actually say, but assumedly.
Yeah, because she added her own name to the list.
Yeah. And it was, I don't know. It also shows how not only is Selena moved so much by Nehemia's death and something is happening with her and her growth, but also maybe the entire country, or at least the people in Calicola were, if not, I would assume also in Endeavor, because of that's where Selena knows a bunch of the people and learned their language and all of that kind of thing. Something is brewing, something is happening.
Yeah.
And
I thought it was an interesting way to show how her death affected others, like you said. And how the other kingdom is going to react to the news, whether we're going to see them react to it in a different narrative or just see them whenever they show up at the gates, sort of thing. But
she's not just one person. Like, she's also like this huge symbol of like hope for her kingdom. And so that had, had just like a huge ripple effect. So I appreciated that we got to see some of that, even if it was just like a seemingly like random POV from a character we don't know. But on a completely different note, chapter 34,
I just read your note.
I highlighted the part where Dorian's like recounting the events of when Selena was like attacking Kael. And he says, but then it was like a phantom arm reached out from within him and wrapped around her wrist. And I wrote, gonna catch him all because he's Dory Phantom.
Sure.
Yeah, I wrote, were you mixing Danny Phantom and Pokemon? Because that's what our kids have been watching lately. But now after I like thought through the theme song, like, no, they do say he's gonna catch them all. But they would make a good mix.
That's
Danny
true.
Phantom. Cross the Pokemon.
Gotta catch them all, Ritterack. Yeah.
It's like just thrown into the Poke Rap at the end. Ritterack, Dorian, Kael, Selena. Be back next Saturday. We'll start naming 50 more.
I also couldn't stop thinking. I just had the whole theme song stuck in my head after this. And I feel like you could rewrite the whole thing for Dorian. Like the.
You could.
When he first woke up, he realized he had night black hair and glowing blue eyes.
That's kind of true.
And it's catchy. I don't know. Maybe we'll write it. Chapter 36. Oh my gosh. This part gave me chills. Like even on the reread, especially on the reread, just, I don't know. Like this part where it says this, I think this is from Dorian's POV. It says, then Selena and the King of Otterland smiled at each other and it was the most terrifying thing Dorian had ever seen. I was like, ooh. Yeah, that was rough.
Well, and it just shows if Selena chose to be, like she could so easily just be the king's assassin or the king's champion. Yeah. And if they decided to join forces, it's endgame for literally everyone in the world.
And who knows how much of that was like an act she was putting on just to show Kael and Dorian that, because whatever Kael was like, what do you think you're doing? She was like, your job, apparently. And sort of like throwing it in their face that
sick
she was.
Burn.
Yeah.
It's almost like she like weirdly blacks out and goes on these murder benders.
Killing palms.
Yeah. And then comes back and is like, oh yeah, I probably should have done that. Oops.
Dang it. Did it again. Killed like 50 people.
But anyway, that is what was happening there. In chapter 37, I just want to make it clear, in some previous podcast episode, it was probably the last one, I called that the sword would be the thing that goes to like help her see in the eye or whatever to figure out the riddle. I just want to point out that
great
I was
job,
right.
Lauren.
Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you.
Does
thank
it again.
You.
Hashtag stay humble.
Again, I said it in episode 2. If I just keep listing all my crazy theories, I'll be right about something. And I can say that I was. So.
Just shotgun it. Something will stay.
Yeah. That's right. There we go. Also, I just want to like congratulate Connor and John for being so tricky about the Ritterack corpse. We had talked about it. Kyle brought it up in a previous one. Like, how did that get in there? We had a whole conversation about it. Who took care of it? We made jokes and you guys didn't give it away the whole time. So good job. Yes. This is your moment. Good job. Good
I have
job.
Lots of practice.
That's true with John.
John's still learning, sure. Clearly. But
very true.
That's okay. That's okay. And then honestly, I hate how manipulative Nehemia has been. Like, it wasn't until this moment that I was like, oh, yeah, that wasn't really good on her. There was times that she obviously didn't tell the truth or she was doing stuff, but I felt like I had some sort of hope for her making some solid choice somewhere else. But the specific part where she's in Throne of Glass and is talking to Selena and is telling her like, and now there's no secrets between us ever again. And it was like, you're straight up lying to her. It wasn't like before where I thought even Selena had been like, yeah. And then there's sometimes like, oh, now I can't. But I felt like Nehemia said that knowing in that moment that she was not going to tell her the truth. It wasn't like later she decided that Selena couldn't know that information or something. And that made me feel sad for, first of all, Selena also figuring that out and knowing that her friend had been lying to her this whole time too, because that also doesn't help her in her grieving process and losing all her friends and all of that stuff. So that was also just really sad.
And look where it got her. Shallow, unmarked grave. Way to go, princess. That's my thing, though, since the first... Even the first book, I was like, she keeps begging Selena to trust her and she's not being open. You can't do that and expect anything good to come of it. And nothing did, even though it may have been, had to happen or whatever, but not good.
Moving on.
Two more chapters.
Chapter 38. I'm the only one who wrote notes for the rest of everything. So chapter 38 was when they are in the library. It was interesting that Dorian was there. And then Selena came, but that was normal because they are always in the library. But then Kale walked in and I was like, really? They're all going to just have a meet cute in the library? Like, okay.
Freaking Kale.
Right? But Kale didn't see them. He saw them, but they didn't see him. Whatever. Mm. What was important was that the librarian guy, whatever his name was, saw something.
Henry,
the librarian.
Henry Solson.
Oh, Sensel.
Herman Solson.
Herb Ertlinger.
Henry Solstice. Harold Schlossinger.
And you'll remember the name. Harlan Sensel.
I was close.
Sensel? Harlan Sensel.
Harlan Sensel. Herman. Yeah.
Stop. It was interesting when the librarian, Sensel, just cut that part out.
You just learned his name.
It's like 5 seconds ago.
Lord, it's Herbridge Satchel. Come on.
Anyway,
the librarian.
So, they're with the librarian and he says just casually, like in almost like a flustered moment, did you know there's a cloaked person sulking around the stacks at all hours of the night? And then Kale just like moves on.
Nobody
like,
cares.
Doesn't like, think anything about it.
That's just classic Sensel. Ignore him.
Yeah.
Why doesn't the librarian like report that? Actually report it. Not just casually when the captain of the guard walks in, but like actually write a formal report. I don't know.
Maybe he did, but he's just so flustered about everything all the time that they just ignored it. Because it seems like that's what Kale's doing.
That is very true. Kale's being very selfish in that moment. He's like, this guy, I just need to get my own thing, you know?
Freaking Sensel.
But there hasn't been any mention of this weird, mysterious, except for the one time Selena saw it. And even she doesn't try to figure it out.
But she was also freaked out by it. Yeah.
You would think that she...
There's been a lot of other things happening. She's been a little distracted.
Especially after the whole unknown monster just murdering people in the castle. It's like...
Yeah. And she was tumbling around in the sheets.
In the broom closet.
Had to go for a tumble. But anyways, I just thought that would be worth mentioning because it's coming up again with this thing. And then this is also the moment when Kale finds out that Selena is, or at least speculates that she is some sort of nobility from Terrasen. I wrote the whole big quote. This is the librarian saying, but I once heard that in the high court of Terrasen, when nobility died, they sang their laments in the language of the Fae, which is super interesting, by the way. Those songs were sacred to the court. Only those of noble blood ever learned or sang them. They were taught and sung in secret, their dead buried in the light of the moon, where no other ears could hear them. So I'm like, it's because she's the lost princess. And so she learned the songs with her parents, I guess, whoever would have been her song teacher. Song teacher. I'm a music teacher. I hate myself for that. Okay. But whoever was her music teacher or whoever taught her the song. And then now that Kale thinks she's some sort of nobility, my thinking is that Kale thinks she's some sort of maybe like on the same level he is, which was, I think he was just like the lord of a certain territory. Like he's not a king. He's just the lord of a certain territory until he gave that up. And so I think that's what he thinks Selena is, like the lady, I guess, of a territory. Maybe he doesn't assume she's like an actual queen or princess or whatever is missing. But I don't know. That was very interesting. And I assume that will come into play, because then as he's leaving the library, he's like processing and it's all hitting him and he's thinking it. And he says that made Selena more than just his enemy. That made her the greatest threat he'd ever encounter. And I was like, don't be an idiot, Kale. Don't be stupid. Don't go to the king with this. Please go to Selena and figure it out. But I feel like he's going to be a big idiot only because he's thinking of her as the enemy, because he's thinking of it as the enemy to Otterlin, which is what he protects or whatever. So it's not going to be good.
I did like in this chapter, too, there was a brief, like, Selena's talking to Dorian, kind of getting out of her mourning self and being a little bit more lighthearted with him. I like the goof she played on the librarian where Fleetfoot's running around grabbing scrolls and he runs by screaming like, there's a beast taking my books. She's like, I don't know what you're talking about, but this is a library and you need to be quiet. And he like just gets even more mad and he's off whisper screaming. That was pretty good. Good prank.
And that Dorian just lets it happen. He's like, oh, yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Classic.
He's letting her have a little fun after her rough time that she's been through.
Oh my gosh. That's why I think, because Dorian's always in the library too, and he's just like, he thinks it's funny and like, it's just letting it happen. I feel like Sensel is probably just super high strung about the library and that's just who he is. Yeah, so they just kind of let him run around frantically doing his thing.
A moment, I didn't even think about the hooded figure being the same thing Selena saw, because Dorian's been sneaking around the library in disguise, hoping nobody recognizes him, looking for these weird books. And I thought for a second he was just talking about Dorian. But you could be right that it's that same thing that Selena saw.
In disguise, but he's definitely been... Because even when Selena finds him, he has like a decoy book ready to go. He's trying to play off that he got caught. He wasn't like in full costume with a fake mustache or something. He was just in a hood.
Oh my God. All right. The last chapter, chapter 39. Roland is jumping on the headache train now, too.
Yeah. I wrote the quote for it, which was, Roland's tried. Thankfully, he's been suffering from awful headaches lately and has backed off, which I was like, oh, poor Roland, first of all, but also that they view him as, oh, good, he's got headaches.
Yeah. Let me get another womp womp.
Yeah, womp. They don't care.
Womp. That's fair.
It mentioned him having that ring earlier, too, which I was wondering when that would happen. That same sort of.
Yeah, but the king and Parrington have rings and they don't get headaches that we know of. But
that we know
of. Caltaine. Yeah. That Caltaine doesn't have a ring, and we know she has really bad headaches. And so it made me wonder if when Roland started, like, I don't want to say teaming up with Dorian, but like being more on his side of arguments. Initially, I thought he was just trying to get Dorian on his side and then eventually would like turn him the other way or something like that. But I thought maybe he really was agreeing with Dorian, and then the king and Parrington started using the ring or whatever on him to keep him in check or something like that. So I just don't know why they would use it on him when at the beginning it seemed like he was in their mood ring best friend club. I don't
know. Maybe that's just something you have to get through before you get to the good stuff. Like, yeah, the headaches will pass and then you'll be in the BFF club for realsies. No more headaches, just power. Duke Parrington's going to take Caltaine away and she's going to come back as some sort of midnight queen of this like black magic.
Crown of Midnight?
I have theories about that, actually. We'll get to that later.
Oh,
all right. Okay.
I just want to point out there that Dorian's room organization was so relatable, as where he was like, don't touch it because then I don't know where it's at. Just like kind of an ADHD hot mess.
That sounds very familiar.
I appreciated that.
I know which pile has what. Thank you very much.
And then he was like, oh, let's eat. Let me clean off the table really quick. Yeah. So relatable. Yeah.
And the fact that like he asked her to come but didn't prepare thinking that she didn't is also like he was like, oh, I wasn't sure you would. So it's like a very quick cleanup sort of thing.
And the awkward apologies on the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then while they're having this little dinner, it's like at the very end, he said an awful part of him was glad she cut out Kale. He hated himself for it. And I was like, he should hate himself for it. Like, whether or not you're maybe happy, because I don't know, like, is he hoping they get back together? Did he just not? Is he just being a bad friend? I don't really know where the motivation for that comes from.
He could have just been in agreement that Kale maybe could have done something to prevent the whole situation. I don't know. We don't really know where he stands between those two things. But also, I don't know. He keeps saying that he's let go of her. But then little moments like this, it doesn't really seem like he has.
Yeah.
Because he even refers to her as like the woman he loved or something.
Yeah. not been that long since they broke up, and it was a out of left field for him. Yeah, I very much doubted that he ever truly let her go.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyways, thoughts and theories.
Yes, Lauren and Kyle, overall thoughts on where this section went and where you think it's going.
I hated this section a lot. Only because there was like, I don't know, I was swooning and I was fangirling and like all the things I was hoping was going to happen happened, and it was great for 1 week. And then my heart just got ripped out of my chest, and I guess Elena and Kales and literally Nehemia's did too, but ooh. I was feeling it for all of this. I just want everyone to be in love and happy. It's just one of those, I maybe pictured it like it was a one book standoff rom-com and not a 8-book series. And I need to continue to wrap my head around that when I'm reading the romance. But for real, I think that the death of Nehemia will be some sort of motivation for Selena to finally take a stand and do something to not be a coward. It ended with her saying that she had nothing to fight for. I think that will give it to her. I'm really glad she's spending more time in the tomb and actually trying to figure things out instead of avoiding it or having other distractions maybe to stop her from that. Like, something's actually going to happen. And then I'm very interested in the riddle, because so far everything has happened in the castle. This book has happened a little bit more outside in the city, even a little bit more travel. Like, at the very beginning, she was coming back from somewhere even further away. So this riddle makes me think we will even get out of Rifthold and see more of the world. So I'm interested in that, but I don't know. There's that.
Like I said before, I really don't think it's the end of Nehemia. Maybe like her end, sure, but not the last we hear from her. Maybe even not the last time that Selena does either, because ghosts are confirmed already. She could come back as one, or in a dream, or a drug-induced state, or something that lets her see beyond the veil of reality. I also think, to expound on my previous wonderings of why the book was titled Crown of Midnight, my guess on the riddle from the previous book that was Time's Rift, as I rearranged the letters to I am the first. Pretty sure that's right. Still haven't seen anything from it, though. But my guess is that it has to do with, even back then, Gavin or Elena's being the first king and queen. Maybe it's one of their crowns as a word-enhanced item. But I think that the king might already have it, because Crown of Midnight makes me think of a blackish or very dark gem or metal. And maybe the rings are a part of that.
What kind of rings?
What kind of rings? Oh, his evil BFF rings? Yeah. Yep. I wouldn't be surprised if he has more, too, because there's three, I guess, according to the riddle. Wouldn't be surprised if he has more, because the third one looks, I would be the hardest one for a character to figure out. The second one's pretty obvious. You could just go check your local volcanoes for more. But I would be disappointed if he already had it, because that would rule out the possibility of getting out of Rifthold. Like how Lauren had said, going to a volcano seems like a cool thing. But if he already has that one and they find out that he does, then there's really not a reason to go unless there's some other mystery held there. But yeah, those are my thoughts and theories.
All right. Well, we did actually touch on this a little bit at the end of our chapter breakdown, but we didn't discuss this in the previous episode. But now, like you said, Lauren, even the librarian is mentioning a hooded figure lurking about. Do you have any like specific thoughts or theories on who this might be, or like what it is now that we're further into the book?
I don't. I think in my head it's like a ghost of some sort, like how Elena is a ghost, and it's just some guy haunting the library. I think the first time it got mentioned at the beginning of the book, I thought it was somebody that was the anonymous threat on Nehemia's life. Like somebody was in the castle and like lurking about and whatever. But we learned that that's Grave, which we didn't even really talk about, that that guy came back and that was an epic death. But yeah, that was insane. But I think that's where I initially thought. But now that we know it's not Grave, I don't know. Other than, like I said, like a ghost of some sort. She hasn't gone back to that room in the library. So we know that Elena can be in her bedroom because she's been there before and she's been down on the tomb. So maybe whatever this ghost thing, it can be in the library. Maybe it's like one room adjacent to wherever you haunt. I don't know. Wherever you
haunt. It's like board game rules or something.
It's chess.
Yes. I guess Selena was, Elena was also at the veranda Santa for the fight with Kane. So she was there too. But I don't know. So I think it's a ghost, but that's my guess.
Just haunting the library because his TBR was too long. He needed to go come back to read all the rest of the books.
I mean, if I had to be a ghost anywhere, a library would be a pretty cool place to be a ghost.
Yeah, pretty sweet place to haunt.
Would you be able to take the books, or do you have to wait for someone to leave it open? Like your hand just goes through the books and you're like, no, I have time now.
I was just about to say that. As long as I could physically touch the books, there then I would be great. But
yeah. And then, well, yeah, and you just mentioned, we also haven't really discussed the Iron Door at all, but it also hasn't come up again. I don't know that there's really room for theories.
Yeah. Where that's obviously concerned. Something's happening there. Part of me thinks that the eyes that she saw, which she said was a rat, I think maybe are actual somebody's actually in there, or something is actually in there. Maybe it was a rat, but it just feels like an easy cop out for her to be like, it was a rat. It wasn't anything real.
One of the other shadow demons, or was it the Volg that was mentioned?
Volg.
One of them's. Mm. One of them's.
One of them things. All right. Well, I don't really have a lot of thoughts and theory questions right now, because this chapter section was sort of a conclusion to a lot of things. But then there's also just some typical end of the book, Sarah J. Maas chaos coming. We'll definitely discuss a lot more of that next week.
You guys really aren't. And I'm super excited for both of you. It's going to be amazing.
Sound it.
And it's just the second book.
You were complaining about how there wasn't enough happening.
Honestly, yeah, I was earlier. I was like, oh my gosh, this book is going slow.
He was saying all of that during the romance stuff. And I was like, what do you mean nothing's happening? Didn't you just see, like, he said this to her and they went on this date?
The thing is, yeah, like, that was happening.
In the broom closet.
I meant nothing unexpected was happening. Of course she's going to go on dates with Kale. But yeah, like you said, there's 8 books left. You may not have even met all of the eligible bachelors of Throne of Glass yet, Lord.
I'm sure I haven't.
Pick 3, Mama.
Anyway.
All right. Close her out.
Yep.
Well, that's a wrap on episode 5. In our next episode, we'll be covering Crown of Midnight chapters 40 to 56, bringing us to the end of book 2. We will be following it with The Assassin's Blade, which is the prequel for the Throne of Glass series. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to our podcast. Follow on Instagram and TikTok. Be sure to check out our website for merch and all our other links that we have on there. And of course, we have our Patreon for community and perks. We would love for you to join us. We have the Snack Court for $5 a month and the Peach Ring Book Club for $10 a month. And finally, sign up for our newsletter at our website, betweenpagesandfriends.com. And we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.